KQ2GS. Good evening, Lorraine. A little bit of noise in the background, but otherwise good.
All right, thank you, Roy. I was at 30% power, now I'm at 50%. I'm guessing that should take care of it.
Yeah, full quieting. There's a, sounds like there might be a little AC hum in the background there.
Okay, well, not much I can do about it right now, I guess. I'm using my usual connectors. I don't think I've changed anything. I wonder if maybe the microphone is picking up something else up. I'll try on my listening on my monitor and to see if I hear it.
Also, check out the stream. I have it reconnected. live.kc2rc.com. Welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am KC2GS and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host and Milen KG2C will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signals. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, or if it's down, the alternative is live.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. By the way, an application is available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Milen KG2C will join in. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experience to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or via email at tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Milen KG2C. Good evening, Milen.
Good evening, Roy. This is Milen. We'll go to Charlie. And I did listen to my signal, and I do hear that AC hum you're talking about, which is interesting because I didn't used to have that hum before, and now I have it, and I thought it had appeared when I was testing another microphone interface, and I thought it was a problem with that interface, but now I'm using the interface I've always used, and the hum is there, so that's interesting.
It's always something, isn't it? I don't know exactly where it's kind of leaking in. There's all kinds of interesting ways that that 60 cycle hum works its way in. I assume it's not anything like a fan going in the background. That would be a little too obvious. So I'm sure you'll figure it out. You just follow the little routes and find if there's some ground loop that's going on in the back of some chassis there.
I did reduce the number of turns around the toroids on my microphone cable, so there should be less choking now. I guess I'll put the extra turns back in. Maybe that made a difference. Back to you, Roy. We'll go to Charlie.
Okay, very good. The topic this past week on the Limark TechNet were ferrites and such. Maybe we'll touch upon the joy of ferrites as well at some time tonight. So this is the Kings County Radio Club's technical net. And I would like to know if there's anyone out there who has any questions or comments or statements or anything that they need to get off their chest on the technical net. Please give me your first name and your call sign.
Hey Roy, this is Kilo Yankee 2, Michael Yankee. I have a question about testing amps.
Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, I guess you're first up, Gene. What's your question for tonight?
I have a Mirage 2-meter amp, and I was thinking about testing it. And I've been testing with the FM signal, but there's a button for SSB also. So why on this 2-meter amp has a FM and SSB and my HF amp? It's only straight FM, there's no different modulations.
The reason is that all amplifiers are not built the same. Some amplifiers need to be linear, and some amplifiers can get away with not being linear. And that switch in your Mirage actually changes the class amplification circuit. There are different classifications of amplifiers. The purest, most linear is a Class A amplifier in which the circuit is biased for the entire waveform. It's very linear, very clean, but very inefficient. Then there's B, in which only half of the cycle is actively biased. And usually people put two halves of a B together, and they call it an AB, and they get about almost as good as an A with some degradation in the signal. And C is just a portion of one half of a wave. It's very dirty. But if you're going to use FM only, you don't need a linear amplifier because it's a frequency-modulated envelope, not an amplitude. If you were to use an amplitude-modulated envelope signal with a amplifier that's not linear, the distortions of the amplifier would distort the transmission, which is why you need a linear amplifier when you operate single sideband. So does that make sense, Gene?
Right now I'm trying to do a testing for the full wattage output, and I'm not getting a full wattage output. I was wondering, I just said they carry on FM. There was nothing, any modulation. Then would that cause it not giving full wattage?
If you operate FM, you just need to tweak the driving power. You inch it up slowly until it flat tops on a watt meter, and that's the maximum available watts that output the Mirage.
The signal, when I do on the HF side, on the sideband, you have to actually speak, otherwise you don't have any wattage on a meter.
Single sideband works differently than amplitude modulation and AM and frequency modulation FM. Single sideband extracts out the carrier and extracts out one of the two sidebands. And the only time you produce sidebands when you're transmitting in single sideband is when you say something. In other words, if you key down and you're operating in single sideband mode, you should be transmitting next to no power. If you then transmit a 1,000 cycle audio signal, what will happen is there'll be two sidebands. Say you're operating 28 megahertz. So it'll be 28 megahertz plus 1 kilocycle and minus 1 kilocycle, and that'll be your sideband. The single sideband device strips away the carrier, 28 megahertz, strips away the plus or the minus, that's where the upper or lower sideband comes in, and simply transmits the consequence of whatever audio signal you're generating. So without an audio signal, single sideband is silent and you'd read zero power. Frequency modulation doesn't work like that. It's a full duty cycle type of a modulation scheme. The minute that you push down the push to talk, it has the same power as if you yelled and screamed, because it doesn't change the amplitude, it just changes the frequency modulation.
got that.
Anyone else have any kind of comments, questions, or additional statements, things that I've left out? Feel free. Very good. I wish you luck with that. Mirages are decent amplifiers. Again, they're probably not the most funnier in the world, but for the most part, most people tend to use them, even though there is a switch for single sideband, most people tend to use them more for FM. So you should find a good home for that soon, I hope.
Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else with any questions or comments tonight for the Technical Net?
I have another question.
Feel free.
This, how does that feel? The Freedom Tower antenna, the huge antenna top, is that a single antenna or there's multiple antennas in that roof? Do you know offhand?
Unfortunately, I don't know that much about the broadcasting antennas on either edifice in Manhattan. I don't know. Melen, do you know anything about that?
Googling it now as we speak, but I know nothing about it. But I would assume they have a ton of antennas up there because it's pretty high up. And I'm guessing, you know, every TV station and radio that can afford it would want some presence there.
The naked eye, by looking at distance, I don't see any like small antenna size. But I should probably bring a binoculars to see what's actually built up that way.
Surmise would be that there are a lot of public broadcasters using that facility simply because of its location and its height. The old World Trade Center had a lot of broadcasting antennas, and of course when it went down, they all moved back to places like the Empire State Building. But I understand that they've been moving them over to the Freedom Tower over the last year or two or three. One of the guys to really ask this about is for the Limark TechNet, Eric, KE2EJ is a broadcast engineer on televisions, and he's very well aware of whose antennas are where because he has to deal with a lot of that.
Yeah, I did what Melinda said. I'm Googling it, and Google has lots of information. I should have Googled before asking.
Say Google is your friend. There's so many times people kind of have a question and I just kind of type it in there and out spits all kinds of useful stuff. You do have to kind of run it through a little internal filter because sometimes the first answer you get may not exactly be the accurate answer, but as long as you have a good Bravo Sierra meter available, Google is an excellent resource.
Bottom ring is the communications ring. Then you have the stakes going up, beacon on top, and a lightning rod on top. That was the question. The order broadcast media is on a lower ring.
Okay, good. I recall arguments of broadcasters when they first made that available to them. They were a little bit slow on the pickup, so you know, you would have thought that they would have moved over there a long time ago, but I think it's only a recent trend that they've been kind of moving over to the Freedom Towers. Okay, very good. So I guess Melen is still kind of going through web pages and trying to gather more information. Anyone else out there have any questions or comments for the Technical Net tonight? We do have a TechNet puzzle, as we almost always do, and I guess I might as well recite it because there's no pictures, so it's easy to recite. The question is, in a radio wave that is defined as horizontally polarized, the magnetic component exists only in the vertical plane, only in the horizontal plane, in both the vertical and the horizontal plane, or finally, the fourth choice is neither the horizontal plane nor the vertical plane, but at right angles to both of those planes in the direction of something called the pointing vector.
We'll go to Charlie with a comment on the World Trade Center antenna.
Comment away.
All right, well, I found an article from 2017 that has a bunch of photos of the antennas there. It's not just one antenna, there's many. Some of them are arrays, some of them are all kinds of stuff, but basically there's a lot of elements there and panels and stuff like that. And if you want to read about it, I can tell you where I found it. The article was published on April the 10th, 2017, and the website is thebroadcastbridge.com. Once again, thebroadcastbridge.com. The Broadcast Bridge is one word, and if you look there, you should be able to find it. I found it through an answer on Quora, where people on Quora were asking, why is there an antenna on the Freedom Tower? And the top answer there had linked to that article, and the article has information and photos. Back to you, Roy, from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Very good. Thank you very much, Milan. Once again, Google is our friend. You just need a little, a decent Bravo Sierra meter available, just in case you might land on some kind of flat earth web page. So once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, asking anyone if they have any questions for the Technical Net tonight, or any comments, or any statements whatsoever.
Roy, if no one else has questions for now, I can switch to my other microphone interface, and maybe you can tell me if you hear a different hum than what you hear with this interface. I'm curious if the other one will be worse now or won't be worse now.
Sure, give it a try. Stand by for the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Net. We're having a little technical test right now, but we'll be back very, very soon.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 2 Charlie with the other interface. I was having a little bit of problems keying it up. For some reason, the button didn't work the first two times. But now it seems to be working. So I'm curious, do you hear more of that hum you mentioned, or you hear about the same amount? I don't think you'll be hearing less of it. But I'm hoping it's not a lot worse than what you were getting before.
It's about the same, so I don't know if it has to do with two of them causing the same problem or something completely unrelated to the microphone and the cord.
Hey, thank you very much, Roy. It's interesting, I just noticed also with this interface, I hear you both on the headphones and on the radio head itself. This is through the speaker. I guess I forgot to ground one of the pins to tell it that I have a HM151 microphone from ICOM connected, which is what I'm trying to simulate with my interface. I don't have that one, that microphone, but I noticed that that microphone, it's basically a speaker microphone, so it has push to talk, it has the microphone, it has the speaker, so I, you know, enabled all that in one interface, plus a keypad for the four memories in the radio. So that's basically what I built. And I guess I need to tell the radio to not use the speaker of the radio when I have this thing connected. All right, thank you, Roy. Back to Ned from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Very good, Milan. By the way, I just got my my Flex radio back from Austin, Texas, so I am once again staring at pan adapters, and I really missed it for the three odd weeks that it was gone. So I'm having loads of fun playing with my Flex radio once again. My IC7100 is a good, hard-working workhorse, and it's never given me a bit of trouble, but I continue to treat it like a red-headed stepchild, unfortunately. But I'm back on my Flex and having loads of fun with it. Now, if I could only figure out why I have audio dropouts with Limark's repeater, life would be simpler.
Congratulations on getting it back, and I hope to hear you on Sunday for the Kings County Radio Club 10 meter net. I didn't hear you last week, but I was there. I don't know if you noticed, but you had dropouts tonight as well on this net. I don't know if this is from you or from the repeater. When you were doing the initial intro, I think you had three or four dropouts, and occasionally when you were talking to Gene, you would have a dropout as well. I don't know if maybe your signal to the repeater is not strong enough, or if it's something to do with the radio or with the repeater. I really don't know. You haven't mentioned that me having dropouts, so maybe the situation is on your end.
No, I just kind of revved it up a little bit. We'll see if that causes any difference. I don't know. Again, my problem is I could sort of understand if it was the flex that caused it, but I have problems kind of contemplating why it would be the flex and the IC7100, because they run on different microphones, power supplies, coaxial cables, and antennas. So this is curious. I'll have to kind of listen to the audio recording that I'm making to figure out how badly I'm dropping at places, and if it's like the way it is with Limark, that some people find it annoying, other people don't care. It's very strange, but who knows? That just adds another layer of confusion to the whole situation, I guess.
Now you're fine. There were no dropouts this time, and you spoke for a while, so maybe you just needed to increase the power, which you said you did, so you sound good now. All right, Kilo Golf to Charlie, back to net.
Very good. I tend to run low power into the repeater, because if I run too much, I desense the IC71 that's recording. So what happens is I record other people, and then when it gets to me, it's about 70% noise. And since I am a particular percentage of this activity, you know, 70% noise is not a good thing. So I try to set it a little bit low. I'm only putting out about 5 watts at this point, and that's with it raised up. So maybe that was what was going on. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra Roy with Kings County Radio Club's Technical Net, and asking if anyone has any questions for the technical site, or has any comments to make, or suggestions, or topics for future reference, or anything like that there. Please give me your name and your call sign. Gene.
Your last transmission, you dropped out like 2-3 times, and the one before, you dropped out at least 4 times.
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. Again, I'll listen to the tape and try and figure out what might be going on. I'm kind of looking at the waveform and don't see anything obvious going on, but I'll have to just take a good long listen to it and see what the heck might be happening.
The amp, because both of you comes in a little like all modulated, because you all, the receiver is much clearer, and I think maybe the amp. But when Lynn talks, they don't drop out.
Okay. Again, if it's the amp, then it shouldn't be doing it with the 7100, although I guess two things can do the same thing for different reasons. But I don't know. I'll have to review the audio and kind of figure out what the heck might be happening. I'm not really overdriving the 2-meter amp that much. It's only going about 15% of its total power output. So I should be kind of annoying the amplification final circuit, but who knows? We'll see.
Hey, Melinda, what happened? I haven't heard Melinda in a while.
Gene, were you asking me something? I didn't understand what you said.
Oh, it seems like do you hear the Roger beep when I unkey also?
When you unkey, with Roy, I hear the Roger beep several times during his transmission, because I guess either his signal is not strong enough into the repeater and the repeater is dropping him occasionally, or maybe someone's just kerchinking the repeater with a stronger signal than his, which maybe causes that as well. Or I don't know what else could be doing it, but I do hear it beeping several times now during Roy's transmission. He will go to Charlie back to net.
Comments.
I cranked it up a little bit more. It's about 7.5 watts, so we'll see how that does. We'll see if I still do a courtesy beep. I don't know. Well, we'll find out. one of these days.
You guys want to do a test? I can listen to a voice input direct, and then Berlin listens to you do repeat on, and you could talk for a few minutes, and we could test that way.
You want me to just transmit so that you'll listen to my input frequency transmissions to see if the input going to the repeater is cutting out or not? Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
No problem. Berlin?
Covid.
I didn't hear him cut off on the repeater. I can't hear his radio directly from here. I can hear Gene, actually, on the input, and someone had a comment. Roy, I'll give it over to you to pick up that station with a comment.
With a comment?
Yeah, Roy, it's Andy, N2HUH, and I want to make sure you copy me first.
Copy you, Andy.
Radio. I was listening on the input while you were dropping out on the repeater output, and on the input I heard no heterodyne. I'll leave that up to you where the repeater is, but I couldn't hear any heterodyne or adjacent signal or see a stronger signal when you did drop out. So I heard or saw nothing, and not to say that somebody wasn't ka-chunking at the same time. I didn't see it or hear it, and that's pretty much it. And hello, Marlin.
By the way, I was listening to your transmission. I know you are near me, and I noticed that when I listen to you directly, I don't hear the hum that I hear from the repeater. And I made a recording of it just now. Your signal into the input is perfectly clear to me without that hum, but from when the signal that comes out from the repeater has a hum. And it's not just you. It was like that for everyone, for Roy, for Gene. So I wonder if that hum that Roy was talking about maybe is not so much from the microphone, could be from the repeater.
It can be. The output of the repeater is rather low. I know we're not using the final amplifier because that blew out. We're using the DR2X, running at lower power, but I think I'm getting something like an S7, which is probably the lowest I've ever heard this repeater at. Usually, even with the blown final, it was higher than that. So, I don't know. It could be that there's an AC hum on the repeater. I haven't been listening to the repeater's output lately.
Funny is, I'm listening to the input at the same time, and I hear Roy's transmission first, direct on the input, simplex, and then about a half a second later or a second later, it goes to the repeater, so I find that amusing.
Most people would find that annoying. Even Dick, K2RIW, kind of asked me why there's such a latency problem, and it's because the DR2X operates in the digital domain, so it swaps everything into bits and such, processes it, and then turns it back into analog. So there's a built-in latency delay, even if you don't use their digital technology. If you try and use it as just a routine vanilla FM analog radio, it's going to always be that latency issue.
I just noticed that. I won't say never, but I didn't really experience the latency issue until just now. That's why I made comment on it. Usually there's not that long of a delay. So, very good. Interesting stuff. N2HUH.
Thank you very much, Andy. Once again, this is AC2GS Roy here with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we come here twice a month on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month to try and answer questions and discuss technical aspects of this mutual hobby of us all. So if anyone has any questions or comments of a technical nature, please give me your name and your call sign.
Off to Charlie with a comment on the latency.
Milan.
I just wanted to say that the latency that you see on the through the repeater, it's, you know, unavoidable in a way, as long as you operate in AMS mode. I don't know if you put it just in FM mode, whether that would remove it, but this repeater operates in what the ASU calls AMS mode, automatic mode select. So you're going to have some latency, because when a signal comes in, the repeater has to figure out whether this is an FM signal with the right tone in it to go through, or if it was going to be ASU system fusion signal. So, I don't see how you could design the automatic mode switching without at least a little bit of latency to sample the signal and figure out how it should be processed from there. So I think it's unavoidable to have some latency. Now, the amount of latency, obviously, that's up to debate and up to the technical specs, and, you know, that would vary depending on how things are designed. But you're going to have some latency compared to a purely analog repeater. So there's just no way to avoid it. And I wouldn't hold that against the repeater, since, this is the whole intention, to be able to switch between FM and the digital mode. You will go to Charlie back to that.
Yeah, I mean, every electrical piece of equipment has a built-in latency. Nothing is instantaneous. It takes a certain set time for electrons to travel across conductors and do their magic. So latency is kind of a relative term. Short latency versus extended latency. There's a lot of feedback mechanisms in the most ancient super regenerative radios out there that introduce, a millisecond or two or three of latency. And to just judge whether there's a carrier that's digital or analog probably only requires that amount. But I think I read someplace, and I might be wrong, but I think I read someplace that it slides all the analog material into the digital domain and does digital signal processing with it, and only at the end does it turn it back into analog. So it's doing a lot more digital manipulation than simply detecting whether there's a digital signal or not. I once tried to do that, talk and listen to myself with something like a 200 or 300 millisecond delay, and it was the most annoying experience that I experienced. With certain slight delays, you can kind of train yourself not to sound like a stuttering fool, but as you bring the delay further and further along, I think even people who have trained themselves to be able to do it, unless they can turn off their ears, I have a great deal of problem saying the next word when they hear their previous word, you know, about a half a second delayed in their own ears.
I know what you're talking about, because when I operate satellites, I almost always operate full duplex, meaning I listen to my own transmission as I'm transmitting. And when I do the FM sets, I usually use two HTs, which are, you know, mostly analog, really. There's very little latency when I do that. With some of them, I don't even notice that I'm talking, because I guess the satellite also has very little latency. It must be designed well, or not just one, but all of them that I've used on FM. With some HTs, there's so little latency, I don't hear my voice as I speak. When I check the recording, it's there, but, you know, wearing the headphones, I'm not aware that I'm talking as much. But with other radios, I have more latency, and it can get very annoying, especially when I use my ICOM 7100 to transmit, and then I use the SDR play to receive on single sideband. And the SDR play unit with connected to the laptop through USB obviously has the most latency of everything I own. And it's very difficult to call CQ and listen to yourself calling CQ with that delay. But with some practice, you know, basically you have to train yourself sometimes to say things and to stop listening to yourself once you know you're on frequency, and just ignore what you're hearing unless you hear someone else talking. So with some practice, it's possible, but it's still annoying. Kilo Golf to Charlie, back to net.
This is like the old trick of a person being told not to think of pink elephants. They sit around thinking of not thinking of pink elephants.
Just remember, I do it all the time when I operated Oscar 13. If I didn't hear myself too well, I knew it was time to adjust the antenna. You know, azimuth elevation or whatever the hell I was doing. So that's why I listened to my signal, because I didn't have any tracking programs to do the tracking for me. I used to have to manually move the antennas.
In the primitive old days, you had to do things, so you just did them. I mean, I don't exactly recall what the circumstance was where I listened to myself with, I think, about a 100 or a 200 millisecond delay, but it was just, I kind of got the sense of what might be going on in the minds of idiots, because I certainly sounded like one. So I've been told that you can teach yourself in different kind of tricks of how to get around that, but I don't know. It was so disconcerting that what I tend to do is I just record myself and I look at the waveform, and I don't have a problem kind of with any latency errors, just looking at shapes pop up, although it doesn't give you a good idea exactly what those wave envelopes really amount to. Hey, once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra with Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments for the Technical Net, please give me your name and your call sign. Okay, let's, I guess, move on to the TechNet puzzle for September 26, 2018. In a radio wave that is defined as horizontally polarized, where would you say the magnetic polarization, the magnetic component of polarization exists? Again, this is a horizontally polarized electromagnetic wave, when you're saying that your radio wave is horizontally polarized. So the question at hand is where exactly that would put your magnetic field in relation to that. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
AC2, WTA.
Oh, good to hear from you. How are things in Staten Island?
Okie doke, Roy. I almost missed the net tonight. I was watching a movie, and then I realized it was after 9 o'clock. But I think when the antenna is horizontally polarized, that is the elements are horizontal, I think the magnetic portion of it is vertical, is that, or exists in the vertical plane, is that right? And that would be, let me look at it, I'll say answer A. Back to net control.
Absolutely correct, Joe. The magnetic polarity is 90 degrees off from the electric field polarity. So in other words, when we say that a radio wave is horizontally polarized, what we're really saying is the electronic field portion of the electromagnetic wave is horizontally polarized. And the way that electromagnetic waves work is that there are two fields, an electric and a magnetic field, and they're both at 90 degree angles to each other. So when the electrical field is horizontal, 90 degrees away, the magnetic field is horizontal. Now, 90 degrees from both the electric and magnetic fields is something called the Poynting vector, which a lot of people think is spelled P-O-I-N-T-I-N-G, but is really spelled P-O-Y-N-T-I-N-G, and that gives you the direction that the electromagnetic wave is propagating towards. So you got three things going at right angles to each other, and that we run out of, we don't have any more right angles in a three-dimensional world that we live in. So you are absolutely positively correct, Joe, and the answer was only in the vertical plane.
Okay, Roy, when I was in 11 meters, I had a PDL quad for a long time, and that was that could run horizontal or vertical. Prior to that, I had a typical three-element beam that was vertically polarized. That's the elements were running vertically. So where was my magnetic field then? Was that still in the vertical plane, or did it shift to horizontal? Back to a net control.
Had your beam in the vertical polarized position, in other words, the elements were going from up to down, then the magnetic field was in the horizontal component.
Okie doke. That was funny when I first got into amateur radio, and you know, sideband high frequency is mostly horizontal, and it seems strange to me to have the elements horizontal and the thing kind of flat. But those are the things you learn. So KC2 WTA on the side.
Okay, very good. Unfortunately, life is never simple. So although people will tell you that it's best to use a vertical antenna to receive signals from another guy with a vertical antenna, that's usually very true for ground wave propagation, point-to-point propagation. When it goes into the ionosphere and gets refracted, then there's a rotation that occurs with the polarizing angle of the wave. And so you might send out a vertically polarized electromagnetic wave, but by the time it lands on that other guy's antenna, it might be a completely horizontally polarized radio wave. I've talked to people on the 10-meter net who live in Florida, and I do diversity reception. So one ear hears my vertical antenna, the other ear hears my horizontal antenna, and I have heard their voices shift from one ear to the other and then slowly back again. So that's Faraday rotation of the ionosphere rotating the polarity of the electromagnetic wave. So, again, things ultimately, if you peel away a few onion layers, they get very complicated.
Need a circularly polarized 10-meter beam.
The beauty of a circularly polarized 10-meter beam is if the other guy has only a straight horizontal or a straight vertical, the worst you can lose is 3 decibels of signal strength. Whereas if you are transmitting on a strict vertical and going directly to a guy who has a strict horizontal, you can get as much as 30 decibels of loss of going from horizontal to vertical or vice versa.
And then the nature of the beam would be that you're, of course, you'd make up for the 3 dB loss because you're using a beam. So anyway, yes. Yeah, I had circular polarized satellite antennas. And let's just say back in the good old days with my amplifier and satellite antennas from Brooklyn, if there was a jammer on 2 meters, he really wasn't getting through. 99% of the time, it was not getting through my station. I would always make the repeater.
So one of the beauties of circularly polarized antennas is you can phase arrange them so that they're either going clockwise or counterclockwise. And the way that the satellite, DirecTV satellites, used to work is that they had both signals, the clockwise and counterclockwise, were two different signals going into one antenna, and you just had two different antenna elements that picked up either of those two transmissions. So it was a great way to squeeze two bands into one antenna system.
I remember my Band-Aid box with the metal Band-Aid box with the switches on them. And then I made a project box and put the switches in that more solid aluminum box. You could not hot switch while transmitting. You could only switch polarization during receive. And if you did it while transmitting, there's a good chance you had to change the relay in the balun or the matching network, whatever the hell they call that thing. the matching network that was attached to the antenna or the feed point input or whatever. I can't even remember, actually. I'm stumbling. I thought I had a specific name, but I can't remember.
Some way you have to change the phase relationship. Some people do that with simply different lengths of transmission line. Others put it through an LC circuit. There's all kinds of different ways to get the same exact results. But, I don't think anyone would really want to put any kind of significant power through their system while they were switching over. That strikes me as a somewhat dangerous thing to do in general for RF and such.
So it was accidental once or twice. I remember having to change the relays. But that's a sealed, usually PVC type plastic arrangement there, or box enclosure. And I would bust it open. I had no choice. I'm nothing to lose. I'd have to bust it open and change the relays, or because I always had standby units. I had like two or three standby assemblies waiting in case that happened more often, or just by just normal failure.
Those are the good old days, eh?
I think I even caused TBI on 2 meters and such back in the day. Even with VHF, UHF, albeit maybe only one or two people had complained when I wasn't even on HF, but I was on satellite.
Fortunately, most people have cable or some other means other than direct transmission, so I think people have kind of even forgotten that hams still exist, because I think, unfortunately, most of the people who weren't in this hobby who knew about us, it was because they kept complaining that our voices bleed through their radio shows and television shows and such.
I always got that. No, I think it's mostly during the day. I thought I asked you and Melinda if you're here on 80 meters, there's a constant throughout the entire band. I keep hearing a signal, especially in the morning, every 10 kcs or so. It's notched out. It's easily notched out, but it's there. I always was wondering what was causing that.
It's a local phenomenon in your area, because I have yet to kind of appreciate it. There is a 30 kilocycle spur that kind of weakens and strengthens and shifts around a little bit on 10 meters, but at the lower bands, I haven't seen any repetitive spurs that you mentioned. But, and I live next to the subway station, so I'm sure they have all kinds of interesting electromagnetic devices that spit out all kinds of noise.
Said the notch takes care of it. Actually, I'm looking right now to see if it's on. Yeah, it's not as strong in the evening hours for some reason. Yeah, it's not as bad. It's mostly during the daytime. Okay. It is notchable. Oh, it just started raining here. Just started raining, as I just announced. So, but you know, when you use the notch, it's not perfect, and you lose part of the fidelity of the signal and so on.
I try to make them as narrow as humanly possible. There was a time that the spurs lined up with 28.380. So I kind of had to notch them. I think I made something like two little tiny thin sections of notches to kind of fill the space. And yeah, you kind of lose that little spectrum of the person's speech. So it's best not to have notches if you can get away with it. But if you're stuck, you're stuck.
Modern radio, I was playing around with on receive and narrowing the filters without notching it, and yeah, some of this newer digital stuff does help out a little bit, like anything, but you got to play with it a bit. All right, back to you. I'm not sure if there was somebody else trying to get in there, Roy, N2HUH.
I heard David, KG2RY. Are you out there, David?
QSL, QSL, Roy. How are you tonight? I'm playing on a HT from my apartment, so my signal might not be so good. How are you doing?
Fine tonight, David. You're about 50% quieting.
Thank you very much for the signal report. About noise elimination, signal enhancement and noise elimination, you might want to look at that little box made by MFJ called the MFJ 1026. Phase out the noise and enhance the signal. Go ahead.
Sure, specifically, if it's what I think it is, but there's diversity reception, which I think I've mentioned. I don't know if you heard me talk about it, in which I listen to a vertical antenna with one ear and a horizontal with the other ear. There are also much more sophisticated methods in which you mix the two signals together and you adjust the phase relationships of the two signals. And by doing that, you could mitigate some of the background noise. So I think that that's what MFJ is doing in that box. You can't do it without a kind of secondary signal. Now, sometimes it may simply be a little pull-up antenna that's just kind of listening for background noise, that it doesn't have to have high selectivity. But you need a second signal. It's not doing anything particularly magical. It's doing a comparison between two signals.
QSL, Roy, but you know, you were mentioning two antennas, so I thought about the MFJ 1026. And, you know, there's a port in the back of the unit where you could connect another antenna. So you could have two horizontal antennas, you could have a vertical and horizontal antenna, or you could just have some wire running along the floor, you know, by the wall around the edge of your apartment. Go ahead.
It's the same basic principle. It probably works better if you have two well-designed external antennas so that you can sample the background noise from the outside rather than the stuff that's more in your apartment, your next-door neighbor, and what have you. The closer it is to kind of a similar environment, if not the same exact place, the better usually phase adjustments can eliminate noises. So yeah, I'm aware of it. Again, it's sort of dependent upon the other antenna. If you just stick a little piece of wire, it might help a little bit, but if you can hook up an actual other antenna that's sitting on a roof someplace, probably you get much better benefits with that.
So, Roy, thank you very much for clarifying KG2RY.
Very good, David. Anyone else with any questions or comments for the technical net tonight? Okay, well, before we leave, let me kind of run down something that was discussed over at the Limar technical net. A gentleman had a cascade failure of just about every piece of equipment other than his radio, and it was sort of tracked down to his Balun. It was a 4-to-1 binocular Balun, and it seemed to demonstrate a short. And the big question was, if you open the box and take a look at the wires didn't appear to be burnt, they didn't appear to be shorted, they appeared to be connected the way you would expect them to. It's not like it's a 1,000 turns of wire, it's some Teflon wire a few turns around, so it was relatively easy to visualize, and yet it was just not working like a Balun should. And pretty much the answer that we think it is that the Balun used ferrites, which are very common tools that we all use, but sometimes we don't quite know what they are. Ferrites, well, there are two types of ferrites, actually. There are hard ferrites and there are soft ferrites. Hard ferrites are what we usually call ceramic magnets, and we use them to put things up on refrigerators. You wouldn't want to use them to block interference. What we use are soft ferrites. which can't, they're ferromagnetic, but they can't hold on to a magnetic field. So if you put an external magnetic field, they'll pick up a paperclip, but if you move the external field away, they drop the paperclip. So they're very, very weak ferromagnetic material. And they're made out of sintered iron oxides and iron, and they throw in some cobalt and nickel and such. They powder it. They put in a insulated binder so that eddy currents don't short out the device, and it's very useful. But the problem is that if you heat up a balun too much, if you put it in a lightning storm or something, and a bolt goes through it and doesn't shatter it, it can still destroy the integrity of the balun. It can disrupt the insulating material surrounding the small particles of iron oxide and cause it to short-circuit itself with eddy currents. It can cause all the iron to oxidize, and that changes the permeability. So a overheated balun is a dead balun. So just something to file away in the back of your head, that these things can be affected, although they look reasonably fine. There might be a little degree of discoloration. So in the future, if you ever wonder if a balun has gone bad, you should look into it, because it has been known to happen. Is AC2? Yes. That's my spiel on balans and the soft ferrites. Anyone else have any questions, comments, statements before we shut this down tonight? Very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be October 3rd, sometime after 7:30 p.m. We offer a pre-meeting technical question and answer session, much like this net, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. as time allows. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. By the way, an application is available on our website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, The Alien Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. Now, it's time to roll this all up, shut this all down, and we'll be back to do it again October 5th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially to Milen KG2C. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys.
Hi, Roy in 7-3 from Kilo Golf 2, Charlie.
It's great net. Kilo Yankee 2, Michael Yankee.